Hello, sports fans, and welcome to the latest episode of the UConn Pod. This is Amon Kidwai coming to you from WHUS Studios in beautiful Storrs, Connecticut, and I'm here with Tim Fontenot.
Hello, Amon. Hello, sports fans, UConn fans. Good to be back for another week, another episode. And we get to start today with some pretty nice news if you're into the civil conflict, which I know everyone in UConn country is. 3:45 p.m. kickoff for the UConn-UCF football game on October 10th. That game will be on ESPNU, part of a very busy day in sports rivalries. You have that game. Right after that, you have the Bruins-Canadians hockey game. And if you're into soccer like I am, the USA plays Mexico at 9:30 that night for a trip to the Confederations Cup. And I guess for Rangers fans, too, out there, it's their home opener, I've been told. So I guess that's okay. Whatever. I'm not really into that sort of thing. I'm into good hockey. Anyway, moving on. More UConn-related stuff. We're going to go into pro soccer, where UConn had a pretty fantastic weekend. If you've been following the former Huskies, obviously, Kyle Larin having a Rookie of the Year season down for my team, Orlando City. Number one pick in the draft this year. A hat trick against the New York Red Bulls this weekend and a 5-2 win for Orlando City. He broke the MLS single season record for goals by a rookie with his 12th, 13th, and 14th goals, passing another former Husky, Damani Ralph, who scored 11 goals with the Chicago Fire back a long time ago, started his career in 2003. The next day, Andre Blake, number one pick 2 years ago, in goal for the Philadelphia Union at the New England Revolution, makes 10 saves, a Philadelphia record for goals in a game, or saves in a game, I should say. Only goal he allowed was a penalty kick, which, you know, UConn penalty kicks, that's bound to happen. 1-1 tie, great game for Andre. And then we go into the college ranks, and kind of a tough week for the soccer teams at UConn, I'm on.
That's right, Tim. We had the men's soccer team struggling a little bit, not doing too hot in the national rankings.
No, you know, it looked like things were going to start turning around after the win against UCSB, but they went on the road for two games, Boston College and USF. Hate USF. I hate USF so much. Thought they were going to get the win. Lost 3-1 at Boston College, lost 1-0 at USF. Tough stretch for the Huskies. It's gonna get tougher now. They have Providence on Wednesday. Providence made the Final Four last year. Very good team, very tough team to play for UConn. Should be an interesting one at Maroney Stadium on Wednesday. Women's soccer team's looking pretty good, though.
Yeah, that's good. I heard they had a little precursor matchup for the civil conflict and took care of business.
Yeah, came from behind to beat UCF a couple days after losing the USF in their conference opener. Rachel Hill, 2 more goals. She's got 8 for the season now. She's unbelievable. Just keeps going for UConn. Sam McGuire got a goal in a 3-2 win. They are looking really good this year. 9-2 now, and they're number 18 in the RPI. So that's a really good spot for the Huskies to be in because they got into the NCAA tournament last year, had to go to Penn State in the second round. So that was a tough spot. If they can keep climbing, if they can get a couple more home games, looks really good for them.
But they are not the most dominant team around these parts. That honor would, I guess, go to the field hockey team.
The soon-to-be back-to-back-to-back national champions, the UConn field hockey team, taking care of business again this weekend.
Yep, honored at the football game this week. So far, undefeated. Big wins over Stanford and Cal.
California, yep.
I think the Cal game was a blowout, right? It was like 10-0.
Yeah, 10-0.
Something like that.
And I'll tell you, they've got a girl on this team, Charlotte Vettner. She's a sophomore from Germany. UConn loves going into Germany and getting its star athletes and bringing them to the stores to become legends. This girl, she's got 4 hat tricks now this season and a team-high 19 goals. I believe the next highest total on the team is like 6. So Nancy Stevens, the all-time winningest coach in field hockey history, has a hell of a player here for the next 2 years after this. I'm surprised. I was looking at the RPI. Even when they were 7-0, you know, back-to-back national titles and all that stuff, I don't really understand all the math and the formula behind the RPI, but they were 7th. There were teams ahead of them who had lost 1 or 2 games, and I'm thinking to myself, are you serious? 9-0 after beating Stanford and Cal, they got to be up there. They got to be number one. I mean, this is cut and dry. This is like UConn women's basketball. Yeah. They're just going to run through everybody. It doesn't really matter.
It must just be that anti-UConn bias. You know, they're just so tired of seeing UConn winning championships that even the computers are eager to crown someone else.
And, you know, we have to keep showing love to the field hockey team. I know they get a lot of love on UConn Twitter, other places, but they don't really get the local spotlight they deserve. They're our last bastion of hope in the Big East Conference. So, I mean, we got to show them some love soon to be back-to-back-to-back Big East champs too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's tough for the Big East. They hardly exist anymore. I mean, to be completely honest,
we're still the ones keeping them alive.
And then, you know, the only Big East team winning national championships is actually UConn field hockey. So,
unfortunately, Creighton's number one in the men's soccer rankings, but that's neither here nor there. I keep forgetting Creighton's in the Big East.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. Well, we'll move on and talk a little bit about basketball recruiting. We had an interesting visitor a couple weeks ago in Zach Brown, a center who people thought maybe was ready to make his commitment to UConn. 7'1" player from Miami.
Already proven to be a great musician.
Already proven to be a country music star. And I believe he's a 5-star center in that class of 2017. And then
number 12 on Rivals, right?
I believe so, yes.
Fantastic.
And then, so he really likes UConn. We're hoping to hear some good news about him soon. Vance Jackson, number 70-something prospect in the country, class of 2016, had a visit to UConn this weekend. He was, he had a tour of the premises with Kevin Ollie. I think he got there on Thursday and must have stayed through the entire weekend. So
yeah, he was there for the football game, definitely.
Yep, so he was there for the football game. I would venture a guess that he stayed for that night and probably left on Sunday, and also probably made a trip to the dairy bar.
Well, you got to do that. I mean, that's pretty much how you win recruits over here.
My sources on campus, I have a picture of it. My sources on campus can confirm, actually, that Zach Brown did indeed make a trip to the dairy bar. So the
question is, which flavor did he get?
Well, that remains to be seen. We'll have to do some more digging on that one, but
I don't know. If there's any people who work with the recruits out there, my advice, always make sure they get Husky Tracks. That's all I'm going to say.
There it is from the insider, the dairy bar insider, Tim Fontenot. And then we have a really huge visitor coming up. When is he getting here? The 3rd?
Yep, Wendy and Gabriel is coming in this weekend before he goes to Duke on the 16th. And actually, he's got Providence the week after UConn, too. So his last month has been kind of busy. He did Maryland on September 11th, Kentucky on September 25th. He's got UConn this weekend, Providence next weekend, and then Duke the weekend after. So that's his top five right there.
Yep.
That's on either side of Kentucky and Duke. UConn's really got to bring out all the stops. I mean, this is going to be a big visit right here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you got to think Maryland is a real threat. They beat us for Diamond Stone. They've got that Under Armour money coming in.
Yeah.
And Wenyen Gabriel, for those of you who may not be familiar, a prospect who about 4 months ago was outside of the top 100, probably rated 3 stars, 4 stars by some people maybe. Not a lot of national recognition. Had some interest from Providence. UConn enters the fray, and then within a matter of maybe 1 month or even less, starts to see his interest across this summer absolutely skyrocket. So
it's like Stevie knock on steroids.
Offers coming in from Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, everywhere around the country, all the top programs starting to offer him, rising up the rankings in meteoric fashion. He's now, what is he now in the country? 17th in the country. On Rivals, now a 5-star recruit in the class of 2016. He plays on that Mass Rivals AAU team, so he's former teammates with Jalen Adams. A couple of other guys on that team that UConn's recruiting, we've spoken to that head coach a couple of times. So that's definitely an AAU program or a grassroots program that UConn is very close with and trying to be very close with. I get the sense Wenyen Gabriel, I would love to be wrong here, but I'm getting the sense he's going to end up somewhere else. I think the allure of some of these major names coming into play, and maybe the fact that there really might not be like a huge opportunity for playing time for him immediately at UConn, whereas there might be at Kentucky or Maryland, I think is really going to make things tough for UConn in this one. I think Vance Jackson, going back to him, I think what I've heard is that it's coming down. He has a final three that had Memphis, Cal, and UConn, and what I'm hearing is that that's now down to Cal and UConn. So things are looking a lot better for UConn with Vance Jackson. Wenyen Gabriel, I really think it's going to be a tough one, and I don't see him ending up in stores, unfortunately.
Yeah, to touch on Jackson real quick, I think we'll probably hear a final decision from him pretty soon. He goes to Cal this weekend. So that'll be kind of that last obstacle UConn has to jump over. As for Gabriel, you know, like you said, there's a lot of you know, a lot of power with Duke and Kentucky in play here. Obviously, Duke just got Javon Delorier yesterday, four-star forward from Charlottesville. And he said that even though Duke already has a number one class for next year, they're not done yet.
It's so disgusting.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. But you have to think that someone like Wenyen Gabriel is probably in that mix of guys they're trying to push for. But like you said, former teammates with Jalen Adams, great relationship with Mass Rivals. UConn also has a pretty solid relationship with Wilbraham and Munson as well, which is where he goes to prep school. Can think of, off the top of my head, Enosh Wolf went there right before going to UConn. And, you know, obviously that didn't really pan out, but still a nice to get a local guy there. But this is going to be an interesting stretch for UConn. These are two guys, I think, either one, you fill out the class, you get a really good-looking class with either of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the class of 2016, incoming class of 2016, already looks really good with Mamadou Diarra, Altariq Gilbert, Juwan Durham, and then also if you want to count Terry Larrier, which I absolutely do, then it's a really, really talented incoming class next year already. With a couple of spots open, definitely still an opportunity for Kevin Ollie and his staff to make an impact there. In much more tangible basketball news, we've got, we've got Husky Run coming up on Wednesday, the 5K run that unofficially signifies the start of basketball practice season.
Look for Amita Brima to win that.
Amita Brima, I would say the other highlight is that Kevin Ollie was the winner for the team last year, beat all of his all of his players, which
and
is absolutely...
And people wonder why UConn went to the NIT.
Yeah, and it's you know, how many coaches can say that they can beat all of their team in a 5K run? I think that's pretty impressive. But we're going to get a chance to talk to some of these players for the first time, really, since the offseason. A lot of newcomers on this team this year, in a different sense than there were last year. Last year, there were a lot of newcomers who UConn was hoping to see a lot from. I think this year, Tim, compared to last year, even though there are a lot of newcomers who we are expecting to contribute, we have much more reason to believe that they can, because it's not just a bunch of freshmen, or in Sam Cassell's case, a freshman and a junior college player.
Yeah, like you just said, you know, last year we wanted to see more from guys who we hadn't seen before, but with Sterling Gibbs and Sean Miller, you're expecting stuff from guys who have proven that they can deliver. I think Sterling Gibbs is going to be a great piece for this team. Honestly, I think UConn kind of lacked the leadership last year, even with Boatwright as captain. I don't think that he was really the guy UConn needed. I think with Gibbs handling the ball and being the guy, the five-year senior, and being the leader on this team, I think that they're going to have that little extra this year.
Yeah, and I think, Sean Miller is another really, really, really great piece. He just fits in so perfectly with what UConn was lacking in last year, and I probably said it already a bunch of times this offseason, but, I mean, for somebody like him who was a good rebounder, a good scorer with a high basketball IQ, I mean, to put him right in there in that power forward slot, you know, when we were kind of struggling, we had Kenton Facey, we had Rakeem Lubin, we had Phil Nolan trying to do things down there, and it really wasn't taking, to be completely honest. Rakeem Lubin is now playing for California State Northridge. and Kenton Facey, God bless him, you know, great rebounder, definitely a talented guy coming into his junior season. You know, it looks like he's just going to be a four-year track kind of guy, and I don't know if he's someone who's going to get a lot of playing time even this year. With Miller now in there, and then with a really legitimate threat in Steve Enoch, who could also be an impact player as a freshman. His story is very similar to Wenyen Gabriel in that he had saw a pretty significant rise in his national interest on the recruiting trail towards the end of his time in high school, but. He's a big, big dude, and it sounds like, from what I've heard and from what little I've been able to see, he also has a decent shot. So I think he's someone, you know, in that role who might be able to steal some minutes from Facey, but it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out with the new players and how they fit in. You know, what's Phil Nolan's role going to be this year?
Take charges.
Hopefully as minimal as possible, and yeah, take charges. That sounds great. There was a really funny quote from him in that article with David Borges about how far out they'd have to move the contact circle for him to stop drawing charges. But yeah, I mean, are there any other players? Let's talk about some of the returning players then, I guess. Is there anyone who you're expecting to see take a big step up?
I think we can still see a lot more from Amita. Absolutely. I think that he, you know, he's proven to be a great shot blocker and, you know, he can overpower somebody. But I think now that he's had time to really get in the gym, doesn't have to worry about off-season surgery, can get in the gym, get stronger, work on getting the rebounds. We all know how much he struggled at rebounding and being able to really aggressively go to the rim. So I feel like he's going to have a big season this year compared to what we've seen in the past. And I was thinking about when you were talking about Sean Miller. I think having a guy like Miller who can come in now and play that four role, and he's a proven, absolutely amazing rebounder.
And be a scorer.
Yeah, that too. But on the defensive end, you know, we see how often Brima extends way out and maybe overplays for the sake of getting the block, and then that leaves the rim completely undefended. And, you know, there's no one down there to get the rebounds or to try to disrupt anything. You have Miller down there who can kind of slide into that position when Brima tries to go and make the ridiculous blocks out by the three-point line. And, you know, I think that's something UConn's been lacking. I think it's something that really helps them this year.
Yep, so we added a lot of intelligence, a lot of experience with both Sterling Gibbs and Sean Miller. You know, we've got a talented, albeit maybe a little raw, prospect in Steve Enoch. We've also got a guy, Jalen Adams, who before Sterling Gibbs came on, it looked like Jalen Adams might be the guy who we just throw right in there and have him be the point guard. And I think people were okay with that, given the performance of the people who called themselves point guards on last year's team. Now that we have Gibbs, that's a really, really great addition because we have the opportunity to ease Jalen Adams into it. We're not really throwing him into the fire there. But, Tim, I guess, what do you expect to see from Jalen Adams this year? What I'm hearing is just an absolute terror, a dangerous player. I think I saw someone say a more athletic Shabazz. You know, what are your expectations for him going into this season?
I've struggled with this all summer. I really don't know how to peg it because, you know, we've heard all these different things about how athletic he is, how great he is. And we were just talking before the show about these guys, you know, these really high-ranked guys just going in and overpowering a lot of guys they play in high school and stuff like that. So it's a completely different game up here. I don't really know what to expect from Jalen Adams yet. And, you know, everyone talks about him being from Roxbury, Massachusetts, and kind of being similar to Shabazz Napier. I think we have to be really careful when we talk about stuff like that because, you know, you can't really just expect him to be Shabazz 2.0 or like an improved, more athletic Shabazz. I think having Gibbs is a blessing for him and, you know, being able to room with him over the summer like he was, and now he's going to be with him all the time up here. I think getting to learn from him is important, and I think he can have kind of that Terrence, not more of a role than Terrence Samuel had his freshman year, but we remember how important Terrence was. And he can be that kind of sixth, seventh guy off, you know, coming into the game and, you know, next year have that starting role and be the big impact guy. But I think have to be really careful with the way you bring him along.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that with, you know, those exact guys we were just discussing, kind of his predecessors. We saw that with Boatwright his freshman year. He had kind of a rocky start because of that fake suspension mumbo jumbo, but you know, we saw that with Ryan Boatwright, we saw that with Kemba Walker his freshman year, we saw that with Shabazz his freshman year, and then we saw, I mean, people forget this about Shabazz Napier. I mean, of course he's a golden god and everything he did in 2014 and even with that 2013 team was, you know, nothing short of miraculous, but you know, there were some rocky points in the you know, Shabazz Napier UConn fan relationship, particularly I think as a result of that 2012 season that failed to meet expectations. So
he basically called out half the team.
Right, yeah. Right. And then, you know, that can be construed depending on how you want to slice it. That can be construed as really strong leadership, or it can be construed as throwing your teammates under the bus. And it just really kind of depends on what those newspaper writers feel like saying or you know, what the fan feels like believing at that moment or how often they win afterwards. So, yeah, definitely preaching patience with Jalen Adams. But at the same time, I think, you know, freshmen, there's always this really unknown component about how they'll perform, even if you have the number one recruiting class, even if you have, you know, like Kentucky, number 1, 4, 7, and 10 coming in or like Duke, who, by the way, Coach K gets a complete free pass for doing basically the same exact thing John Calipari does I don't really fully understand that one. But, you know, you have one of those recruiting classes. There's still an unknown in how a freshman is going to produce in his first season. But from what I'm hearing, there's a maturity to Jalen Adams' game that and the fact that he's a true point guard that I think makes it really exciting for me to see makes it very exciting for me to want to see what he can accomplish this year as a freshman in a role that will be much lower pressure for him than what we originally thought.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I keep thinking about, going back to comparing to Shabazz Napier, I feel like freshmen always have this desire to impress right away and to really go above and beyond what they need to do. And if he's going to keep hearing the Shabazz Napier stuff over and over this season, and it's natural that's going to happen. I think he needs to be able to put it on the back burner. You could tell when we met him over the summer, people were asking him about Shabazz this and Shabazz that, and he was really apprehensive about answering those questions. He was really uncomfortable with it because he wants to be his own person. He looks up to him greatly, being a local hero sort of, but he doesn't want to be in that spotlight, that shadow, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he handles it all year.
All right, so that's basketball. We've got Husky Run coming up tomorrow. First night coming up on October 16th.
I hate that.
Which is a real disappointment because that is the same date and time, I believe, as the hashtag IceBus home opener.
Yes, the men's hockey team, better known as IceBus, returns to Hartford on October 16th at 7:05 against Arizona State. And I pitched this question to my Twitter followers the other day. If you had the choice, first night or ice bus, what are you choosing? And I said, I answered it myself. I said, it's a no-brainer for me. You go to the regular season opener for the men's hockey team.
Yeah, I mean, first night is certainly a fun event, but we're talking about an actual hockey game here. So while all the glory boys and Click Hounds will be at first night, the UConn blog staff will be dutifully too strong at the ice bus home opener, and we'll have to just find somebody else to cover first night for us. It's just, you would think that they would find a way to have those happen on separate days.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Obviously, first night's been on a Friday for however long, and it's not what it used to be when it was Midnight Madness, and you know, that was this big thing that a lot of teams still do around the country. And I used to think that was amazing coming up here on you know, Friday night at midnight, going to Gamble. But now it's just kind of like you could do that on, I don't know, Saturday after the football game. You can do it some other, like, it's not something that needs to be that day because it's not even like it signifies the first day of practice anymore. The first day of practice is Friday or Saturday, whatever, Saturday, I think. So it's ridiculous to me that you would do this. And I just saw UConn Husky, someone was able to retweet it since, you know, UConn Huskies blocked me on Twitter for whatever reason. They put out the big preview thing. You know, you're not seeing any previews for the men's hockey games or whatever. And ticket sales are on the rise for that, too. They're much higher than they were last year, I think, even. And so I'm expecting a big crowd still at the ice bus return, but I just think it's so ridiculous that they would do that the same day. But yeah, it's no surprise because they do that with football and soccer. They do that with basketball and hockey sometimes anyway. So
it definitely does feel a little
silly.
You got
to take what you get.
To have those two on the same day for sure. But I will say this. I mean, having watched first night last year and comparing it to the times where I attended as a student in the 05, 06, 07 range, you know, the production value has increased tremendously, I have to say, which is great. But again, when we're talking about having it be the same exact time as a hockey game and you're in this situation where you have the hockey program, you're trying to raise the profile, it's in Hockey East, you're trying to build excitement, and you've got the home opener, and you're scheduling it on the same night as this kind of popcorn men's basketball event, I don't know what exactly is accomplished by having those on the same night. And like Tim said, why you can't move first night to the Saturday when there's no particular significance for that date or anything like that.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone knows my opinion on UConn-Arizona State. I think this is going to be a great game to watch this year, potentially three times. I think this is going to be a great game to watch for years because I'd be surprised if they don't play each other for many years down the road. Two big schools to rising hockey programs. I think it's going to be great. So that's definitely something to go out there and take a look at. It's just, I don't know. I think if you're going to go to first night, I will say the one thing to check out is the new lights in Gamble Pavilion. Because, guys, if you haven't been to Gamble since the end of last basketball season, the lights are fixed. They're new and improved and amazing. They played with them a little bit for us over the summer when we went up there to meet the new guys on the basketball team. It's awesome. They don't need to be turned on 5 days before a game to get to full lighting. They're on and off instantly. They can do so many more things with them. They can make them flicker. They can do the strobe lights and all that stuff. So you can see like the dimmed lights starting lineups and all that stuff. It's going to be pretty cool.
Well, that's something to look forward to. And either way, you know, even this scheduling conflict aside, we're talking about Husky Run. We're talking about first night. It's almost basketball season.
And it's almost ice bus season. Both obviously big, fun, great things. Going to have two big years. I am so excited for both of these.
Hunker down in the winter and maybe start some sort of tailgate club for before ice bus games with a hot chocolate with a little something extra in it. We'll move on. We'll talk a little bit of football. Tim and I, we just got out of the Bob Diaco press conference occurring a day early because the Huskies are playing on Friday.
They will
kick off at 10:15 at BYU, which will, even though BYU just got blown out by Michigan, I think it will still definitely be a really, really tough game for the Huskies. Tough to do on a short week. Tough to be doing on the road, two time zones away. I don't know, Tim, what's your take on kind of this BYU matchup?
It's an interesting one because obviously the way BYU started the season was nothing short of amazing, especially after Taysom Hill went out. But then, you know, you go to Michigan and like Bob Diaco said, BYU beat the snot out of UConn last year. Michigan beat the snot out of BYU. And I don't know. It's going to be really interesting because it sounds like they're not even going to look at the BYU-Michigan game tape this week. Diaco saying that it was pretty much unwatchable for his players because that's not the real BYU. The real BYU is what he describes as a offense that is branched out from Rich Rodriguez's original offense there. And I think it's going to be really interesting because they don't have the same quarterback options that they did with Taysom Hill. He's not that dual threat like we saw with a couple other guys earlier this season. Tanner Mangum's really just going to throw the ball. That's all he can really do. I mean, they have a decent run game, but it's something where I think UConn is blessed to be out of the triple option jungle now after the Army and Navy games. They can get back to being the great defense that they are that we saw against Missouri. I think it's going to be a tough game. BYU 17.5 point under favorites, I believe, entering the game. I think UConn can definitely make it an easier game than that. Their biggest challenge is going to be the time difference, I think.
Yeah, it'll definitely be tough. And I think, just like you said, they will be relieved no matter what kind of weapons are on that offense to not be facing the triple option and specifically Navy's triple option ever again. I tried to get some insight from Bob today in the press conference, asking him if it was
ridiculous.
Disruptive to the overall defensive development to be facing two option style teams in the season. He kind of just plainly said, yeah.
He didn't just kind of. All he said was yes.
All he said was yeah. And I mean, I guess there isn't too much to add. I was hoping he would, but you know, it's definitely got to be disruptive. Where they're not even going to watch. I don't think that defense. You know, you said they're not going to watch the BYU Michigan film. I don't think they're going to watch their own film against Navy in preparation for this week, and they're not going to watch their own film for Army for this upcoming game. So that's 2 weeks, two games that are just completely off the realm of normal defensive development. That being said, this UConn defense, I think, still is very special. They just, you know, they just lost at the hands of an offense that's executing something at a very, very high level. So hopefully they can make some stops, and I'm still a believer in this offense. I think it's pretty decent. They didn't really come through when they needed to, but Navy was really able to pin back and be really aggressive defensively in the second half, I think, with a big lead. And that's when they started making those tackles for a loss. They started sacking Sheriffs. They started getting a lot of pressure on him. Another thing that I noticed, you know, Sheriffs has been off on some of his throws kind of throughout the season, and this was the first week where I felt like he was tucking and running a little bit earlier. In the first three games of the season, I felt like I was really, really impressed with when Brian Sheriffs would tuck and run, I would say, wow, you know, that's a great situation. He found the yardage, got what he needed to, and, you know, he was about to get sacked and didn't. You know, Chandler Whitmer would have gotten sacked there. This week, it felt like there were some missed receivers. There were some throws. You know, there's that fourth down play where nobody's going to tell us what went wrong. You know, that fourth down play in the first quarter with Max DiLorenzo goes down for the block, gets back up. If he flattens his route a little bit, you know, I think he's got open space and actually scores there, but who knows what went wrong there.
No, it looked like there was some miscommunication. Sorry to interrupt. It looked like DiLorenzo had all that space to the corner, like you said, and it looked like Sheriffs was expecting him to make that move, and instead DiLorenzo cuts into, what, three guys?
Yeah.
And Sheriffs throws behind him, and it was just a really puzzling situation. You could tell Sheriffs was pissed after that play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing is before this season, we're talking about how concerned we are about this offensive line. And, I mean, again, you look at the stat sheet. They gave up five tackles for loss and seven sacks or the other way around. And that's a lot. That's a lot. But, like I said, a lot of those were happening at the end when UConn was down two-plus scores. Navy knew we were going to be passing on every down. I think that's when a lot of those plays really happened.
Yeah.
I think the offensive line, though, has really been pretty solid, all things considered. This was a good Navy defense, better than I expected, and they've held up. So, you know, we're going to still be competitive in games, and hopefully this road trip, this short week, doesn't do any significant damage. The team is still fairly healthy. Marquise Vann is the only one, you know.
And he's almost there.
Who's a little dinged up and hasn't been playing. You know, you just hope they can put up a solid performance against what is a really, really good BYU team.
Yeah, and to touch on Marquise Vann really quick, it's not like UConn's lost anything in that department. You know, obviously great player Marquise and the leader on this team, but Matt Walsh is every bit as good and as every bit a leader. It's going to be interesting to see what this offense does against BYU because they're not really having that great of a year defensively. Their wins, you know, their two wins this season have come on Hail Marys. And losing to UCLA and Michigan, obviously two great teams. I've seen a couple of experts think UCLA is going to play for the national championship. But BYU still 94th in total defense in the country. They give up 414 yards a game. They give up 229 through the air. They're allowing close to almost 30 points a game defensively. So I think this is going to be a great opportunity for UConn to really exploit BYU's defense. We've seen that they can get down into those scoring areas. They just need to be smarter about what they do when they're down there. I was talking to a couple of the writers after the game, and I think it was Jeff Jacobs made a really good point. Him and I were talking about what we would have done in that situation, and I was glad he said it because I was thinking the same thing. I would have flip-flopped when UConn went for the field goal and when they went for the fourth down. Conversion, because you get down there that first drive of the game, it's 0-0. You can go in and fourth and one at the 21, get the first down, get inside the red zone. You have a better chance to score. Probably get in the end zone there. If you don't, you know, whatever, you still just take the points. But then on fourth and five, why wouldn't you just kick it? Because, you know, you're running the risk of getting no points compared to 3 points. I think, you know, it would have just made more sense to flip-flop those decisions, but obviously down in the huddle, heat of the moment, it's kind of tough to really gauge what's going to happen the rest of the game. UConn did a great job of stopping Navy in the second half, but in the first half, Navy was running all over the place, and I don't think Bob Diaco was ready for that.
Either way, I think it's pretty clear that at least there's not a conservative approach to this team.
Yeah.
You know, you saw that with the flea flicker earlier in the game.
That was awesome. He almost got it.
He almost got it. You know, you saw that with, of course, the Missouri game and all the shenanigans they, you know, were going on there. This team is going to pull out all the stops to win. This team is going to be aggressive about finding ways to win. And that said, one of my favorite quotes from Bob Diaco, I think, after the Missouri game was how he said, you know, we kept it close against Missouri, and it wasn't magic. You know, there was nothing spectacular or weird that they had to do to keep it close. They just played their style of football, both offensively and defensively. And that's what I think is the most promising thing about this UConn team, is that they have a style that fits their team now, and they're doing a good job of running it. You know, they just really ran into the same exact problem that ECU did against Navy in that they fell behind early, and then, you know, you just can't fall behind early against Navy, and because of how long they're able to hold on to the ball and, you know, what it allows their defense to do. So,
yeah, I mean, Navy's one of those teams that you can watch them play and think that they just make the other team look terrible. So that's why I wasn't really sure what to think of East Carolina after that game. But East Carolina comes back this week, pouring rain, knocks off Virginia Tech for the second straight year. I watched that was a great performance by East Carolina. So they're a better team than they looked like against Navy. UConn's a better team than they looked like against Navy. I honestly just think at this point in the season, I was high on Navy coming into the season. I think now they're the team to beat in the American, and I don't think that many teams are going to have a chance to. So I think that we're looking at a team that, like Diaco said, is going to be highly ranked at the end of the year. He was voting for them in the coaches poll. He's very high on them. I think Navy could very well fight its way through this American Conference and win the conference championship.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, within the conference, we're talking about, besides Navy, in the West, Memphis has been looking pretty good.
Houston.
And then Houston. And then in the East, I mean, Cincinnati, of course, already lost to Memphis and already lost to Temple.
And they've looked surprisingly bad. I mean, even...
Who did?
Cincinnati. I've been kind of shocked with how they've played. They're putting up a lot of points, but their defense has just been shocking to me, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely haven't been able to stop anybody. And then, so those are the competitors in the East, really, it looks like. Am I missing someone? Cincinnati,
Temple.
That's.
I think it could be Temple and UConn going 1-2. I think UConn's got a great stretch coming up here. Going to BYU, they got a chance for that upset out there. I really think they've got a good chance of winning out there. But then you go to UCF for the Civil Conflict. UCF has looked atrocious this season. So that's a game where bring the trophy down, bring the trophy back. Andrew Adams is very confident that they're going to be bringing that trophy back home. Then you go next weekend is homecoming against USF. That's two great opportunities to get to 2-1 in the conference. Then you have Cincinnati. Cincinnati is going to be a great test out in Ohio, you know, with the way they've played so far this year. We could be looking at a game that could decide who Temple's biggest competitor is in this division.
Well, did we ever think we'd be talking about competing in the AA East, though, before this season started?
No, you know how it is with me. I thought they were going to be terrible. I thought they were going to win 4 games max. I thought they were going to be last in the division. I guess I should throw out East Carolina there, too, as a challenge, but UConn getting East Carolina at home is going to be a great thing. That's a potential win right there, no matter how well they played against Virginia Tech. I've been pleasantly surprised, like I said last week, with UConn. I'm really starting to believe in Bob Diaco and what he's doing here, and it's coming along quicker than I thought. I really think they have a chance to go to the conference championship game if they play hard enough.
Which would be nothing short of amazing. And then, real quick, let's talk about this. The gray alternate uniform.
Ooh.
I have a guess.
When
now.
Do we roll that out?
I have a guess. I think it is that Friday game against East Carolina at home.
Yeah, I think that's what I said a couple weeks ago, right?
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
I'm super smart, so probably, yeah.
So and great minds do think alike.
That's
so
true.
That's my guess for the uniform. We still haven't heard anything. I've been prodding a little bit, trying to find out, not really getting anything. But look out for the alternate grays in that Friday game against ECU.
Which I believe, if we're looking at the home schedule, so we've had the 3 games so far. Then we have USF, East Carolina, Houston, missing someone, I think.
Houston and Temple.
Temple's away.
Oh, you're talking about home games. Yeah. We have Houston at home.
Yeah.
On like November 20th or 21st or something like that.
Yeah. I think that East Carolina game is the one that makes the most sense. That Friday night, you know, under the lights, it's going to be on ESPN. That's, I think, where you roll it out.
So, Tim, you think that they can compete for that American East, you know, crown this
year? I really do. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I really think they can.
And so then it kind of would almost go without saying, then if you feel like they're doing that, then you feel very strongly that they're going to be making a bowl game.
I'd be out $20 if they do, but yeah. I made a deal with my friend before the season because I was convinced that this team was still another year away. And my friend was going around on a bus on a trip we made and just going at everyone, making this $20 UConn makes a bowl bet. So I decided to get in on it. I told him I wouldn't do $20. I would show up to the U.S. soccer team plays two games in January after a camp. I'd show up to the bar in Hartford for when we watch the games wearing a UConn football bucket hat, which I've always been against, obviously, since, you know, the whole Diaco bucket hat thing became a thing. And so if UConn goes to a bowl game, which I am now fairly certain they have a chance to, I will be walking around in a UConn bucket hat for a little while.
Well, that'll be definitely something to look forward to, in addition to making a trip to a bowl game for the first time since the 2011 Fiesta Bowl.
Maybe Hawaii.
Which feels like it was an unbelievably long time ago, even though it was just 4.5 years ago.
I'm trying to figure out. I can't remember who scored the other touchdowns. I remember Robbie Fry and Dwayne Gratt scoring touchdowns in that game. That's how long ago that was.
There was a pick six. Was that?
That was Dwayne Gratz? Bubblegum rapper Gratz. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then Robbie Fry's kick return.
I actually was at that game, and first of all, got shished by a couple of older UConn fans.
Well, that's
in the
mean.
Rows in front of me. Got shished at a football game, at a Fiesta Bowl game.
Getting shushed in general is just ridiculous.
It is rude, and it's not a good feeling either.
No.
And then the other one was, yeah, on that pick six. I think that pick six made it 14-7 or something like that.
Yeah, that was early in the game where it still looked like UConn was going to fight Oklahoma this whole game. And then it just kind of ended up being like that West Virginia game a few years ago where Oklahoma scored again.
Yeah, but when that game was 14-7, we were jumping up and down and spilling beer and popcorn everywhere like we had just gone ahead in the World Series.
That was good enough for me, especially with the way that season had gone. You know, there were some up and downs that year, and yeah, I just feel like no one really believed a BCS game was even in the cards until that Cincinnati game after Thanksgiving. They beat Cincy and then come off the field, and the entire student section starts chanting BCS. BCS. I'm thinking to myself, we go to USF next week, and if we win that game, we're going to the Fiesta Bowl. Holy crap!
Yeah, which is awesome. And I think, you know, coming back to this year, for the team to make a bowl game this year would just be so remarkable. And I also think just so great for the senior class. And when you just think about everything that they have been through in their time at UConn, you know, many of them were probably recruited here by Randy Edsall. You know, if you're a redshirt senior, to go through the entire Paul Pasqualoni era during your college career.
They've been through some interesting stuff.
They've been through some stuff. You know, yeah. They've seen some things. And, you know, not just, you know, let's on and off the field. They've just seen so much go down. When you talk about having to watch UConn effectively downgrade into the American Athletic Conference, and everything that is associated with that, to watch the program spiral into the depths that it had under Pasqualoni after such a proud start to its time in FBS, you know, it would just be really great for those guys. Kenton Adeyemi, Julian Kempenny, Graham Stewart, somebody who transferred over here
from Florida, no less.
You know, Andrew Adams. It would just be great, Tyler Samra. You know, it would just be great for those seniors, and even, you know, someone like Jeremy Claflin, who I had a chance to speak to this offseason after he, former walk-on who was awarded a scholarship. He told me, you know, he said, I want to make a bowl game more than anything. He's a guy, he's playing on special teams right now for the Huskies. I want to make a bowl game more than anything, he said, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And, you know, that's those seniors. It really does mean something to those seniors to be playing in a bowl game, and just how great it would be for them to be able to do that in a season where nobody's expecting it, where they're in season two, trying to make a culture shift happen in this program, and looks like they are.
Yeah, I think we can take the words trying to out at this point. I think it's already happened.
It's looking very much ahead of schedule, and that's really great as well.
I think having a big season this year, too, is just a major boost for recruiting also. We've already seen what a great class great in UConn terms coming in next year. That's going to be fun to watch. I mean, if they can get a couple extra wins, a nice boost in recruiting, and really help this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where UConn is in recruiting right now, you know, I think even for any school to get three-star prospects is a big deal for them at really any level.
Yeah.
And for UConn to be bringing the quality that they are bringing in this 2016 class, And then to be putting on an impressive campaign this year, better than expected again, at least, you know, it just gives a lot of positive energy to the program and a lot of hope that, well, A, something that we've been saying since the offseason, that this 2016 team is going to be really good.
Yeah.
When you think about the amazing amount of sophomores that are contributing and then juniors as well, you think Obi Milifon was a junior, Javon Hadley's a junior, Matt Walsh, a linebacker, is a junior right now, Noel Thomas. So there's going to be some senior leadership, but then all of these sophomores who are just so good. I mean, Arkell Newsome, Ron Johnson, Luke Carrizola, Foley Fatukasi.
Say that one five times. I love that name.
Junior Joseph. You know, sophomores all over this team making big contributions and just how much better they are going to be next year. You know, we're talking about going into next season. This sounds crazy, but we're talking about going into next season expecting 8 or 9 wins, I think, if this season plays out the way it seems like it's going to.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really good-looking team for the next couple of years. And you think about it, like, they're not replacing much next season. Mm-mm. They really, the only position they have to look at in terms of, you know, someone who hasn't gotten a lot of experience is probably going to be that strong safety spot where Andrew Adams goes. But number two behind him is Ellis Martyr. And we've seen him come in a lot on special teams, but a lot of times coming into the game as a defensive sub and really stepping up. When he's in there, he makes the plays. So once Andrew Adams is gone, he's really going to be able to step it up. And obviously Obi Milifon, who's going to be a big factor for UConn next season. I think that they're in a great spot because they're not really losing much.
No, and then of course, you know, again, we'll lose Marquise Vann, Graham Stewart at linebacker. Matt Wall steps up. Someone like John Hicks is able to step up.
Yep.
Junior Joseph's already a junior. And then you've got E.J. Levenberry, the transfer from Florida State, who's going to be eligible. And you know, he was starting as a freshman or major rotation player as a freshman for the Florida State National Champions in 2014.
Yeah.
Actually, former high school teammates with a 2016 verbal commitment for UConn, quarterback Donovan Williams, both play at Hilton High in Woodbridge, Virginia.
Yep.
But
speaking of the high school class, if you really want to see what UConn's got coming in next year, this Friday is actually a really good chance to do that. If you're in the area, on Friday at 6:30 p.m. over in Glastonbury takes on Southington, a battle of two quarterbacks, Keon Dixon, who obviously isn't going to be a quarterback at UConn, but he's going up against Jay Rose. And I wish I could go to that game. I think it's going to be something special. You know, two great guys. If you're a UConn fan and you're in the area and you need something to do Friday night, that's what you want to do.
That's not bad.
No.
And I checked out Jay Rose this past Saturday. I happened to be in the area and decided to check out Southington host Simsbury.
And they rocked.
It was tough because I didn't get a great chance to evaluate Jay Rose, to be completely honest.
For those who don't really follow it, Southington beat Simsbury 55-13 in a train wreck of a performance.
I think it was 42-6 at the half. I think Jay Rose threw like 4 passes, maybe 5. 3 of them were touchdowns. So didn't get a great chance to really evaluate him as a thrower, player, passer, any of those things.
Yeah.
Simsbury has pretty cool looking uniforms, good for them.
I think it's an interesting start for Southington because they've played and blown out Manchester, Hartford, Public, and Simsbury. But now, if you really want to see what Jay Rose can do, and you're near Southington or in the Hartford area, especially, they play 3 games on the road in a row: Glastonbury, Hall, and Connard, which will be good games. Then they get New Britain and East Hartford before taking on Buckley, HMTCA, Weaver, Co-op, and then Cheshire. So this month especially is a really good chance to get out there and check out some of these recruits. You know, Jay Rose, Keon Dixon. And then if you're near the preps, Suffield and Cheshire Academy, go out, check out Taj Herring and Suffield Academy. They play a lot on Saturdays. A couple of chances in Connecticut, but a lot of their games are in Massachusetts. So if you're closer to there, good chance to go out there. But it's definitely an experience to go out there and check out those guys. So definitely take that.
Absolutely. And, you know, guys, just get into football recruiting because it's really, really important. It's a lot less shady than basketball recruiting also.
Which are both less shady than hockey.
Right.
I just need to say that. Don't ask me about hockey recruits. It changes every day.
That's unbelievable. We'll have to get on top of that eventually, maybe. But yeah, you know, definitely need to be staying on top of what's going on the football team, who the players are coming in. You know, we heard Bob Diaco actually at the press conference today even offer up some kind words about a true freshman, Matthew Pert, offensive tackle from Boston, kind of a late-ish addition to the recruiting class. And, you know, he's someone who I think is going to be in line for some early playing time next year as either that second tight end kind of thing or maybe even in an interior spot. Who knows? And then, of course, Tyreek Beals, the true freshman. I mean, let's talk about him. He had a tremendous game, 78 yards from scrimmage, one of six receptions for like 63 yards, and then one that was called a rush. Really, it was a quick pass. And the touchdown where he, you know, slipped right through the coverage, got behind him, 39-yard touchdown from Sharef. So and he was someone who was starting to get a little involved. You saw it earlier in the season. Now somebody who we've seen what he's capable of, and hopefully it's something that he can build on.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been high on him all year, and I think he's only going to get better. Obviously, we didn't get to hear a lot from Brian Sharef about him after the game. You know, Brian doesn't like to talk after a loss, and we don't really get to talk to the true freshman anyway. But there's definitely excitement about him. I got a couple more things while we've been recording. We started the show talking about Kyle Larin and Andre Blake breaking their records over in Major League Soccer. While we were recording today, the MLS Team of the Week came out, and Andre Blake is the goalkeeper on the league's Team of the Week, and Kyle Larin is one of three forwards. And it's pretty cool because you look at it and they put the pictures up of all the players, and he's right there next to two guys who, if you follow European soccer, and I know a lot of people do, Didier Drogba and Sebastian Giovinco are the other two forwards on the team. So to have Kyle in that company is elite company, and very cool for him and very cool for UConn, and just anyone who's a fan of him and Andre and following that team, it's awesome to see. And also, I meant to do this at the start of the show, but I need to make a couple corrections from last week with hockey, which I should be much better with. I accidentally said Brent Norris is still on the team. He is not. He transferred to a school back in Canada. And Derek Pratt, I owe a major apology to, because I believe I described David Drake as one of the tri-captains on this team with Patrick Kirtland and Sean Pauley. It is Derek Pratt, one of the other sophomore defensemen, not David Drake.
Well, let's hope Derek Pratt can forgive you in one of the 55-plus opportunities that you'll be around the hockey team in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see him for UConn Men's Hockey Media Day, going to talk to Coach Kavanaugh, captains, and I've put in for a couple other players, Evan Richardson, Kyle Hewson, Rob Nichols, of course, the Great Wall of Nichols, and Miles Gendron. So should be a good time. I'm sure there's going to be other guys there.
Yep, be very, very excited for Ice Bus, and we at the UConn blog plan on being all over it, which will be starting tomorrow. And then actually I appeared on a podcast with a lovely group of gentlemen known as East Coast Bias.
Love those guys. Eastern Bias.
Eastern
group Bias. Over there.
Eastern Bias, good group of guys. As usual, some of the non-recorded stuff was probably more of the more entertaining material. Too bad. But we'll definitely be in touch with those guys across the season. They're very receptive to the UConn emergence. Sort of. and we'll be sure to share that out with you guys as well. In the meantime, that's going to do it for us today. For Tim Fontenot, this is Amon Kidwai, and we'll see you next week.